My name's Stephen Neal, pastor at Alden Bethel Church and blogger at Building Jerusalem.
And my name's Stephen Watkinson, church planter in Rochdale and blogger at Northern Souls.
So, Stephen, you're still forming as a church. You're sort of careering towards independence.
Yeah. So it makes it sound like it's going to be a car crash, but yeah.
I chose that word carefully.
Advisedly, yeah thanks.
You're welcome.
It does feel like that.
But you are, in theory, well, you are meant to be independent already.
Yeah, and we are nearly there.
And yet, not there.
I know, and so, we have failed.
So you are not independent.
The dog has eaten our homework and we haven't handed it in.
That's right. Sorry, we've given you an extension. But you're going to be independent, and presumably as an independent church, you're going to have some form of membership process. You are going to have some distinction between the people who are members and aren't members. Two basic questions for you. Mm-hmm. Where are you at in terms of having that process in place? And secondly, what is it?
So from reasonably early, in terms of forming what we would see as the core group of people who were determining how we were going to form this stuff, we had what you might call an informal membership process. Informal as much as anything, because we didn't exist as an entity. I mean, it's that weird thing, isn't it, where you kind of do and you kind of don't. So clearly we're not a charitable entity yet. We're not a CIO. We haven't got our CIO. That's what we're careering towards in terms of independence. And that has all sorts of implications about finances and all that kind of thing. But we wanted to draw some boundaries right from the word go about who's making choices about how we're going to do that. And so we had a sort of semi-formal, if you like, process where we did the kind of thing of, this is what you're signing up to. So you've got to agree with the FIEC statement of faith, and you've got to commit to certain things and that sort of thing. We formed a membership like that. We recognise that then as you form your CIO, you do some stuff, don't you, about your constitution and your church handbook and all that kind of thing, where that process then has to be written down, tightened up. This is what you mean. And what was quite nice was having a group of people who are basically on board, being able to do that together, so that you then kind of go, this is what we want. Not in a kind of weird way, but in a sort of biblically, how do we think this should work? And how do we want to express that in our context? How do we think that should work in our context? And so we are sort of at the point where we sort of nearly have that. That will be, people who know a bit about my story in particular in terms of coming out of Church of England ministry into Free Church, independent church ministry, know that the lack of a distinction between those who are in the church and those who aren't, and the lack of discipline for those who are, were things that troubled me in Anglicanism and were things that I wanted to get working in the church plant and that I want to see working properly. Not because I think that you can read. So what we will have for our membership processes and how we will work that, obviously we're looking to scripture to give us the shape of that. But you won't be able to read exactly what we do out of the pages of scripture. But I think because you can read the shape of what we want to do, we want to set something up that we feel we can make work in New Testament terms in a way that I found very, I think it's quite interesting actually listening to Anglicans. Quite often there's the big issues that we know about in the news in Anglicanism, but what a lot of Anglican ministers who are evangelicals find really hard week by week is not having that stuff working properly. So people taking communion who you don't think should be taking communion, people wanting baptism who you don't think should be being baptized, all that sort of stuff. So for me, it's been that progress of trying to get something that works. And we are developing that kind of process. Yeah.
So what will your process look like in practice? Because as far as I'm aware, you haven't yet asked me to be your de facto bishop who you have to come to excommunicate anybody. So,
well,
what, I mean, I'm waiting for the letter.
Obviously.
I'm still waiting. But assuming that's not the line you're going to go down, what are you actually going to do? Are you going to make yourself the de facto pope and say you excommunicate everybody without reference to anybody else?
No. So, unsurprisingly, no. well, I hope that's unsurprising. So the process will be one of someone wanting to become a member will be interviewed by elders and so forth. I mean, we don't have multiple elders right now.
So can I just ask a question quickly before you move on and tell us the rest? Would you be open to members of your church doing that initial interview, or would you say that must be an elder?
So I think normally I think it's going to be likely to be office holders who do it. But we actually at the moment it will be me and another member, because the only office holder as it stands is me. We don't have a big problem with that because ultimately we're going to bring it to the membership anyway. I think it just, it'd be interesting to hear what you think, but say you want someone reasonably, someone might be a member but may not be an ideal person to be doing that kind of role, if kind of maybe don't have quite the maturity or something to do it, wouldn't stop them from being a member. So that it would perhaps normally be office holders.
So, but there's going to be an initial interview with possibly an elder, possibly an office holder, possibly a member, but there'll be an initial interview of some sort, okay?
Which is broadly just say that someone can come to a members meeting, or, you know, that they can come to a members meeting and say, this person has, wants to be a member, they have a credible faith, they understand what we stand for as a church and are happy with that, and they are committing, they are happy to commit to these things that we are asking of members. So we would look to normally, if they're coming from another church kind of background, we're going to ask about that, we're going to probably look to contact that church, that kind of thing is going on. We are specifying this in our church handbook, so having that, for example, normally we will ask for a reference from the previous church, that kind of thing. So we're looking to trying to get some information to basically take to the membership and go, we think this is a credible person for membership, and for the members to agree to welcome them or not. That would broadly be, I mean, it's, that sounds a bit quite high level in describing our process, but that's what we would be aiming to do.
So just to be totally clear then, that someone comes and says, I want to be a member. They have an initial interview with someone. Then references are taken if they are from a Christian background already. Then you go to your members and the members take a vote on it, or they're just told this person's coming in. What happens?
No, so, okay, yeah. So it would be for the way we're setting it up, it would be for the members to agree for them to join the membership. So the people who have interviewed will either recommend or not recommend, obviously, because they come with the information. And they might recommend that with caveats or with explanations, or whatever, I suppose. But the membership would then agree or not agree. I can't just remember what percentage we put on there, because there's, so for any of you who've put together church handbooks and things, there's various different percentages for different things.
I would
things.
Imagine it'd be a 50%.
I think it is. I think it's
technically 51%.
Yeah, I think it's a 51%. So it'd be a vote.
Okay. So basically then what you're saying is you've got a member ruled membership.
Yeah. So, yes, and I realise that's what you're asking me. So it's not, we are not...
you're not elder ruled.
We're not elder, is it like we're elder-led and member ruled? Is that the way you talk
that
about
it? That would be how I would put it, yeah.
Yeah, rather than elder ruled with kind of members who make, who have to be consulted or have to make certain decisions.
Yeah. So ultimately, your final arbiter of who is in or not in the church is your members.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that would be true the other way around as well. So obviously, we're also working on our discipline mm-hmm. processes and same sorts of questions. But so I, as the pastor, can't just put someone out of membership. In that sense, I'm not the bishop or the pope. Or...
Yep. So the door in is the same as the door out.
Yeah, I mean, that would be weird, wouldn't it? If the door in was through the members and then the door out was the pastor's decision or something.
I mean, I suspect there probably are churches out there that have a setup like that. But yes, I agree. I think normally it's how you came in is the means by which you're normally removed. Yeah.
So I think that's useful. Look, there are obviously multiple ways that you set up those kind of processes. If you're going to have outside influence, which I guess is like both Presbyterian and Episcopalianism would have for bringing people into church position and church membership. I'm not quite sure how it works in Presbyterianism always. But anyway, we're not having that. And so therefore you either end up with a bit of a dictatorship or a small group dictatorship, or you leave it with the members.
What you're saying is you either end up with a dictator, some sort of oligarchy.
Committee. Yeah.
Yeah, or technocracy or whatever you want to call it. Politburo, perhaps.
I can imagine putting that in there. We have set ourselves up as a Politburo.
We are the Politburo, yeah. Or you basically have direct democracy, don't you? They're effectively your option to an independent church.
And, you know, look, honestly, I'm a newbie to the game, and I'll see how it goes. But it feels like, and I think actually the people who are coming with us with it would find it quite hard. It's a weird one, isn't it? Coming out of things where you've been really frustrated, where you've had very difficult external authorities. The last thing you want is an external authority. Now, that might be slightly unfair because you might have a very good external authority, but actually in our context, we're not looking to that. We're looking to be sort of self-governing. How are we going to do that? Well, it's going to be congregational.
Yeah, I mean, at the risk of being inflammatory, I think one of the reasons people get into problems is because they start asking the question, what's the pragmatic thing to do here? So what are the potential issues? What do I think is the pragmatic solution to that? And there's all sorts of answers you may come up with on that front. Whereas you do want to be asking, well, what does the Bible seem to say? What does the Bible, it may not say everything about every scenario, but what are at least, you know, the skeleton things that the Bible does say that we should put in place? And I think you want to start with those, don't you? And you want to start with what they're doing.
Yeah. And so, I mean, and that's, we accept that there are different ways you could play out what we've done. I mean, it's interesting when you do the stuff, we were sort of given a kind of model church handbook, for example. Mm. And that you know, I mean, some independent, I mean, it's given to, I think, lots of independent churches, and there are things that we've tweaked one way, and you could see that you could tweak them another way, and obviously some places do, and you know, and there's points in it where they're kind of going, if you're going to do this, then you need this in, and if you're going to do that, then you need that in, and and I totally understand that why people go one way or the other on some of those things, and they are, you're working within some of the boundaries, aren't you, of going, well, this is what broadly what we think it should be, and I can see why you might choose that way and why you might choose that way. But we're doing that, and I mean it's an interesting one, isn't it? Like, I can see why churches will want to tweak it as well, because I can see there are some decisions that we're making as we go. And these are kind of small issues. But for example, there's questions about the kinds of membership you have, you know, like junior membership and associate membership.
Do you have those?
We are working on those decisions at the moment to try and work out how we are thinking. I think of, there are circumstances where we would want someone. Do you know that thing? So the associate membership thing is often set up for temporary. So someone's with you and they know they're going to be with you for six months. And so you might just bring them into membership, that sort of membership for 6 months. And that, and some of that seems reasonably sensible. And we're just trying to work out some of how...
So we have an associate membership approach. So basically, for almost everybody, you're either a member or you're not. That's pretty well it. Associate, really, in practice, means you're a non-voting member. And the sort of people you would put onto that are, for example, people who are infirm.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Who you know, you're not putting them out of membership. And that would be quite wrong to put them out of membership. But at the same time, you know they're not going to come to a members meeting and be able to vote. So you're basically saying, be associated with us, but don't have sort of all the rights.
The weight of
So you get people like that. There would potentially be other scenarios. So we've had somebody come to us, became a full member. They then moved away, but the understanding was they were only going to be away for about 6 months.
And they're coming back.
So rather than just kick them out and then have to go through the whole process again, we said, okay, we'll put you on an associate membership. If, of course, after 6 months, it's becoming clear you're going to stay where you are, then we will probably move you to transfer your membership somewhere else. If, however, you do come back, that's great. We'll move you back onto full membership at that point. So that it's for things like that, really.
And some of that stuff is just kind of nuance in thinking about. And I think one of the reasons we sort of recognise we're trying to set up right, and we're looking at your church handbook, and you know, you've given us that, and it's so helpful. And
yeah, it's interesting that you've landed on pretty well exactly what we
did. It's weird that, isn't it? Copy, paste, copy. But
to be honest with you, that's my plan for sort of influencing independency altogether, really, is just going, have my handbook. Have my church handbook. It's like, oh, all these churches seem to operate in exactly the same way we do.
But we can see, so it's interesting, you can sort of see where you make a decision and it seems really logical, and then you hit up against reality and you think, okay, actually we might have to modify some of these things in small ways. And
but I mean, that's pastoral ministry, isn't it? And I think it comes back to what we've talked about before on this podcast about heuristics, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you have your rule of thumb. So in the ordinary run of things, this is what we do.
Yeah.
And that is basically our unbending, unbreaking rule forever and a day. Unless and until I hit something where
clearly I'm going to bend it and break it. And I think it's been good for us. I mean, it's an interesting thing as a church plant, because obviously in one sense you could start with a completely blank slate. In another sense, you kind of know that you don't want to do that, because it takes a reasonably arrogant person to go, I think from scratch I can build something better than anyone else has ever done.
Well, again, there have been churches I've known where they've planted, and really the noise around the planting is, we're doing church in a new way. We're going to do it in this sort of, no one else has kind of quite done it right, and we're going to do it right with this. And I just think, I mean, are you saying in 2,000 years of church history,
no one's nailed it better than you?
No one has done it before now. I mean, that seems like quite a claim. But anyway, coming back to membership, one difference I think between you and I is baptism.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about baptism per se, but clearly if you've got a full membership, but you're baptizing infants, how does that work? So for us, we don't have that problem.
Yeah.
So we do not have a set of people who are baptized and not in church membership. Baptism is what makes you a church member. We do have children in church membership. So interestingly, my son was the first child, certainly in the current dispensation, of child member. So he was the first child member we had. Shortly after him, and this wasn't planned or anything like that, but we then had a family whose children were in membership at their previous church, and so they were coming en masse asking for membership. So we now actually got and then there was another family as well whose family were also in membership of the church they'd come from. So we've now got I think four, five, six children who are in membership, and all of them are just full members of the church. They have voting rights. They can do everything. We recognise the parents may say some of the time, this members meeting or this particular thing might not be one for you. We're happy to allow parents that leeway, mm-hmm. but ultimately mm-hmm. you're a member and you're in membership. How's that going to work for you when you've got a 6 month old who you've decided to sprinkle?
So the standard for membership is Trinitarian baptism and credible profession. But we don't obviously require them to be at the same point.
Would that mean then infants are not members of your church? They are baptised but not members? So hang on, you've got a bunch of unbaptised people who can't be members, and then you've got a bunch of baptised people who also can't be members.
Say that again.
So you'll have, obviously, like every church, unbaptised people who can't be members because they're not baptised. But then you've got a bunch of people you are baptising who can't be members.
Yeah, so if you're an infant, I mean, look, if you're going to allow infant baptism, you recognise that the baptism comes before the credible profession. So if you're making, so your standard of membership is both baptism and credible profession. Now, I know you're going to have an issue with that over what you think is a member of the church.
Is a good question, though, isn't it? So what you're saying is there are members of the church, universal, who cannot be members of the church visible. Or would you say they are members of the church visible, they're just not members of your local church?
I think you are waiting for the demonstration that they are members of the... But by credible profession, they are members of the church.
So would you say they are or they aren't members of the church?
So I think you are taking it by you trust in the Lord's covenant that they will come to that, knowing that they may possibly not. I know we're going to have this discussion. I know this is a discussion we've had.
All I'm saying is that doesn't quite answer my question. Are they, in your eyes, a member of the church or not? The universal church, that is.
I think it's complicated. I'm not denying that it's complicated. So you don't have...
It needn't to be.
It's the same question that you would have asked of a circumcised... I mean, we're going to go down this line, but it's the same question you would ask of a circumcised Israelite child, isn't it? Are they true members of Israel or not? Well, they could demonstrate themselves to be or not.
Well, no, I don't think that is the question you'd ask, because they were members of Israel. Every person who was born in Israel and circumcised was a member of Israel, weren't they?
That's not quite how Paul puts it, though, is it? Well, he talks about true Israel and not true Israel.
But he's talking about...
And about remnant and not remnant, which is what you have in the Old Testament.
Which, again, this is going to come down to our different views of the covenant again, isn't it?
Well, but, I agree. So, yeah. I mean, I think we could. I mean, I agree. And interestingly, you asked about junior membership. So some of that flows into that for us. And I didn't think we're quite there. We have discussed it as to how we're going to make that work in terms of it's an interesting question in what you've said, isn't it? How you make kids' membership work.
So let me explain how we work it out, rather than have an argument with you about it. Let me explain how we work it out.
Them full members.
Well, let me talk
with parental.
Let me talk about the covenants and then how we work that out, and then you can tell us about the covenants and how you work it out. So my view of an understanding of the covenants is everyone who was circumcised and ethnically Jewish was a member of Israel. They were in the covenant in Israel. And so everyone circumcised was in Israel. I think what Paul's talking about in terms of true Israel and not is not to do with in the covenant or not in the covenant. He's talking about something different.
Believers and not believers.
Correct.
Okay.
But he's talking about something different for particular purposes at that. In the new covenant, however, I think it's very clear. We're doing Hebrews at the moment. Hebrews 8, referencing... what is said the prophetically in the Old Covenant is that all will know the Lord. You know, you enter the covenant by faith. That's who's in the covenant. So in the same way as everyone in Israel who was circumcised was in Israel, everyone who is a believer by faith in a new covenant is in the covenant. And so for us, the people who are in the, who belong to the church are the people who believe by faith fundamentally. And therefore, if you believe by faith and you are, therefore, you can be baptized, you can therefore be a member, therefore that's how we work that out. And therefore, we don't see a distinction between members. There's not sort of half members, junior members. Yeah. You know, you're either a member or you're not. You're either in the covenant by faith and therefore can belong to the church, or you're not and you don't. That's kind of how we work that out. I'm just wondering how you would then work that out in your...
Yeah, so setup. I think... I mean, it's difficult to say. I think you are baptized into the covenant, and in the same way as with Israel, you are looking for them to come to maturity in faith. And if they don't, then there's a sense in which that would be a point where you put them out. How we will work that out, I think, is that we will look for the credible profession of faith. Whether we still have a level of junior membership in that, I can't quite work out. I mean, it's interesting what I suppose I could ask you on it, in that is one way of giving the sort of parental responsibility to call, you know, like you said, like sometimes parents would want to say, actually, this isn't appropriate for them, and all that kind of thing. Is that implicitly a junior membership, or... I suppose it's not, because junior membership, the way it's phrased, at least in our model thing, is attend, discuss, but don't vote, I think.
Yeah, so our junior members, for want of a better phrase, are still voting members. They still have a vote, and their vote counts equally as everybody else's vote.
How do you stop? This is just me answering my questions in the podcast now. So the one thing that struck me is that if I make a child a full member, then there's nothing in the constitution to stop them becoming an office holder and a trustee, which actually legally they can't.
Well, there is something to stop them, isn't it? It is, they have to be voted into being an office holder, don't they? And who's going to vote a child to be an office holder?
Okay, but you've say, and that's your control on it. There's nothing that you're putting in that says because you're not 18 and you can't be a trustee of a charity. Correct. Or whatever the rule is.
Well, if you're member ruled, who determines who your elders are? Who determines who your deacons are?
You wouldn't write that in. So that's the thought that I had with junior membership, is that kind of writes that in.
But you don't need to, because members have to vote on the officers, unless they somehow have some collective break of some sort and become psychotic.
Yeah, and no one goes, is this a good idea?
You end up with a board of trustees made up exclusively of 9-year-olds.
Yeah. And the pastor.
Yeah, I mean, that, I just...
There's a certain kind of a American teen evangelist thing there.
That's right.
There?
Yeah. So I don't see that happening.
Okay, yeah, I understand. That's one of the things that bounced around my mind on that. I mean, see, more broadly, it's sort of, I suppose that's what, for me, as we're putting some of those stuff together, I see how we could end up wanting to put some things in or tweaking some things later, wanting to take them out. Because, for example, I could see some of how, now what was the other thing with associate member, honorary member or something like that? And we talked about why I couldn't get my head around why someone would be an honorary member. And people from more of that background go, okay, we've seen where this happens. And it sort of, I kind of got it. It was usually the kind of the pastor who'd been the pastor for 30 years and has retired and moved somewhere else, and they wanted them to stay honorarily involved. And we were all a bit like, that just seems a bit odd. Like,
yeah, I mean, I would argue...
Obviously, we like them, and
I would argue very strongly against doing that.
Well, it is odd, isn't it? Because you're kind of going, they've moved away, they need to be a member of another church. They probably are a member of another church.
Correct.
You're not dishonouring them or not saying they have any kind of...
Well, it's a misunderstanding of membership anyway.
Friendship with the church type thing.
Membership isn't an honorary system. It's not an honors thing.
Well, yeah. See, I mean, we had quite a productive kind of discussion around that, because genuinely I was like, huh, what's that? and people were able to say, well, where we've sort of seen it is this. And then we were able to have that kind of discussion with basically everyone kind of going, saying that kind of thing. That doesn't seem to fit with what we are trying to do. We can see where associate membership might fit with what we're trying to do. And there's a load of things. You could, I suppose the one case, you might call it honorary membership. I don't think it's a very good name. You know what you were talking about, where someone has become elderly or infirm or whatever it is, where you want to say you're still a member, but we totally understand that you can't be a functioning member in the same way. I think probably the associate member language is more helpful.